you're listening to the Creepcast on DownrightCreepy.com. Now, here's your creepy host.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Creepcast here on DownrightCreepy.com. I am Casey Canton along with Adam Roberts, and today we're going to dive into Shudder's cursed film docuseries, which talks about the tragedies that surround each of these films. Then we'll rank them, but before we rank them, Adam, we got to do a creepy check today. How are you doing?
Just in general, how creepy am I doing?
Well, let me put it this way. On a scale of creepy children from like Regan at The Exorcist or Damien from The Omen, how creepy are you feeling today?
Creepy children. I'm not so much Damien today as okay. I mostly feel like Carol Ann.
Okay.
And most that? Everything I do. I don't know. Like I like Carol Ann's very robotic, I think, in Poltergeist and the apocalypse and everything around the world has kind of got me feeling a little robotic. So, how are you feeling?
I got to tell you, I'm feeling a little Esther from The Orphan today. Feeling that kind of creepy.
That's serious creepiness.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm not really feeling myself because of everything going on. I feel like a child trapped in an adult's body with just the weight of the world on your shoulders and not knowing how to react to it. So I might just like burn the house down. I don't know.
Fuck it. Who cares? No one can stop you.
No one can stop me. I'm an adult.
You're an adult playing a kid.
I'm a 13-year-old adult.
Yeah, as we've all, we all know that.
We all feel the same way. Well, I'm glad we got that creepy check out of the way. As always, just really therapeutic. But if you want to ask us any questions or talk about this episode, you can hashtag us Ask the Creep or Ask a Creep. God, I'm going to get this right after 10 episodes. Ask a Creep. Hashtag that at Downright Creepy on all social media networks. And we're actually giving away physical media.
What? Like some compact discs, some mini discs? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's all of the images that you see on your TV screen smashed now into one disc for a limited time only. And we have that from Shudder. We're going to give that away. So if you hashtag ask a creep at Downright Creepy, tell us which is your favorite cursed film, and maybe you'll get some physical media in your life. How do you feel about it?
How do I feel about physical media?
Yeah.
I love it. I'm one of those fools that spend a lot of money on vinyl records. I actually have bought more Blu-rays in the last 12 months than I've purchased anything of. It's kind of, I think it's helping my neuroses during the quarantine times. Like I'm just like, because I can't leave the house. It's like shopping online. I'm just like, buy this and this and this and this and this. Now, I haven't gotten around to watching a lot of them, but I know one day probably I will. Well, the safe thing with Blu-rays, I feel like, you know, DVDs, we were all like, wow, look at the quality. Quality is so much better than the VHS. Look at that. I had a great VHS collection, and then that transitioned to a great DVD collection. And for like the first like 8 to 12 years of Blu-rays, I was like, no, I'm not fucking doing this again. I've already done it twice. but the reality is like Blu-rays look incredible. And even if there's like a 4K or 8K or diamond collect, whatever the hell it ends up becoming.
Laserdisc.
Yeah, whenever the Laserdiscs come back, the Blu-ray will still always look very good, and it's just a better presentation than DVD and VHS and Laserdisc and all those things that came before it. So I feel confident in now, whatever we're in, 12, 15 years of a Blu-ray existing, I feel confident now building the collection, and you can get like everything, and you're not in the first iteration, so most everything's been newly remastered and it looks better than it's ever going to look and sounds better. And I have some 4K stuff, but you know, I have a 4K and a 4K TV, but truthfully, I don't notice a huge difference. And especially in the pre like 2015 movies, they all kind of like, they look good, but really only have I noticed any in movies made like in the last 5 years when there's like a regular Blu-ray and a 4K Blu-ray, probably because there's just shot with modern technology, using modern color schemes and things like that. But yes, Tim, I've been buying physical media, so I hope everybody is on the same wavelength as I am. If not, consider doing it, because it might just be the habit you need in your life at these times.
You got to get that Justin Beam commentary, baby.
Yeah, baby. He's working on everything, it seems like, these days.
You got a Blu-ray that's a horror Blu-ray. He's probably on it. Also, your Blu-ray buying addiction, I won't call this a one-for-one, but it's much like when I buy books. I'm like, oh, this looks cool. I like the cover of this, and I read the back of it. Now, we'll put it on my shelf and never read it. and it sounds like you have bought a lot of Blu-rays, and maybe that's happening to you. But yeah, I have a lot of books that I don't read, Adam. Very educated.
That's okay.
But they look cool when they make those Frankenstein and Dracula books, and the front of them looks so dope.
Oh, you bought some of those? Like, yeah, some of those
Barnes and Noble.
How dare you spring that B word into this?
Just saying they look dope on my shelf.
All right.
So anyway, whew, that was a big one there. If you want to win some physical media that Adam adores, then I'm gonna throw you a curveball here.
I want to win it.
You can get a DVD, not a Blu-ray. You can get a DVD.
After I spent 4 hours talking about how I was mad about DVDs. But yeah, hey, but for something like, well,
commentary.
DVDs aren't the worst.
Yeah, they're fine.
They're not the best. They're not the worst, though.
No different than streaming something, usually, that kind of quality.
Yeah, I mean, if you're streaming on like one of those freebie ones, like sometimes Tubi doesn't always have the best stuff. It's like a DVD quality one.
Right, yeah.
Shudder's where you go for the pristine, you know, they generally always have like those nice remasters.
For sure. Well, let's move on. Let's move past it. Let's get into one of the subject matters on the cursed films. Let's start with The Exorcist, because I saw a fan poster this week that's been going around that looked great, by the way. A lot of fan posters, too. I also saw Scream 5.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Wasn't that great? Scream 5 fan poster. So
I clapped my hands when I saw it. I was like, woo-wee.
And then I was like, oh, it's fake. Well, okay. Because you know the new one's probably just going to have like people's pictures on it, like a 90s version.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to be as good. But this Exorcist one had like a super creepy modern take on Regan, and it was kind of glowing eyes. I think people could go either way on it. Like, it's either, well, that's kind of cheesy, one of those like cheesy DVD covers, or it's a interesting take on it, right? The question I have for you is, are we ready for an Exorcist reboot after we had a really great take on the TV series? And if we are, who would you like to see at the helm?
Directing it. I didn't.
Yeah. How do you feel about the reboot first, if it's a thing?
Well, you feel about okay. That? Well, I guess the first question is it an actual reboot, or is it? So the problem is we've had a number of sequels. We've had we had the short-lived TV show, which it was kind of like a loose. I mean, it was more of a sequel to the movie.
Yeah, it was almost like in the universe of.
Yeah, because I mean, she's in the movie, or she's in the show as an adult.
Yeah.
But let's see. Well, I wouldn't remake it, because you already have one of, you know, it's like remaking Jaws. You already have it done perfectly, and it was done by written by the guy who wrote the book, right? And you're not gonna get somebody like William Friedkin. Obviously, William Friedkin then wasn't who he became in our heads, but he was still like a top tier director making a horror film. So the likelihood of you getting somebody to do that is pretty low, I would say. My concern would be you're gonna get somebody to do like what they did with Suspiria, which while it has like interesting stuff, I'm not a huge fan of it, because the original is just too perfect. To try to remake it doesn't quite make sense. And here you have, it's based on a book. So are you just actually doing a sequel, and are you just using the name? And I think it's that. It kind of reminds me of Ghostbusters. I was just thinking of this the other day, like Ghostbusters 2016. Is that when we had the, 2016. And then we were going to get one in 2020, 4 years later. We're getting another movie just called Ghostbuster. Well, now it had Ghostbusters Afterlife, but we're getting another movie so quickly that's just it's like, oh, it didn't work, so let's veer courses a different way. So like this just feels like, oh, the TV show didn't work that well, let's veer this way. But the TV show was really well reviewed. I don't know what the ratings were like, but it was good.
The TV show for
The Exorcist.
The Exorcist. Yeah. I liked it. We talked about this before we started. I think I watched about, gosh, I'd say it was 2 to 3 episodes of that. And little side note, side story. I actually watched that pilot at Comic-Con, and it was up against, I had to make a decision. I had to either go watch that TV pilot, which looked super interesting, or I had to go watch the surprise Blair Witch film, which I did not know. I did not know it was a Blair Witch film. It was Into the Woods or something like that.
Yeah, it was just The Woods.
The Woods. Into the Woods is a different movie.
I wish it was The Wood.
It was a musical. And so I picked that. And then when I heard that it was a surprise Blair Witch film, I was kind of pissed off at myself for going to the Exorcist TV series. But then I watched it and I was like, whoa, this is actually pretty impressive. And then I watched the Blair Witch movie later and I was like, I don't know. Because I love Blair Witch so much. I think in my mind, I just expect something incredible, and it just wasn't. So yeah, I liked it way more than I thought I would. I know a lot of other people did too before it got canceled, so that's a bummer. But if we were getting this reboot, like you said, we need a little more information around it. What route is it going to take? But regardless of that,
I don't think history has not been kind to an actual remake of horror films. Right? Like, you look at Poltergeist, you look at Psycho, you look at a lot of these movies, like, you're more likely to have success.
Whoa. Are you talking about the Vince Vaughn and Hayes Psycho film?
Yes.
Shot for shot,
except for the weird added sexy stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, like, your chances of with an actual remake are, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, your chances are going to be pretty low of it being good as a standalone movie, especially when you're taking the original was perfectly done and is still considered a classic and still scaring people today. I mean, it's just not gonna work, right? But what other angle have we not seen? We already had 2 sequels, we had 2 prequels, arguably, if you want to say The Beginning and Dominion. Or they're both technically prequels. Yeah. And then you had a TV series. So what haven't we seen? I guess what we haven't really seen, which maybe we kind of did though in the TV series, we haven't seen like an actual modern take on it, on like, let's erase the history of, we don't need, let's not talk tied into that original events or Reagan or anybody, or like, what is an exorcism in 2020 look like? But who do you trust to make this movie, Tim?
Well, 2 things. First of all, we're going to start creeping dangerously close to the Amityville Horror if we continue to go down this path, I feel like. But just because there's going to be so many iterations of this. But I'm still interested in...
There's more Amityville Horror films than any other series. And I discovered that on my other podcast as I entered heavily into the Amityville Horror territory.
Yeah, I know you guys thoroughly kind of dove into every facet of Amityville Horror on the Nightmare podcast, Nightmare Hour, which you guys should check out. The thing I was going to say, though, is in terms of who I would want to take on something like this in kind of a fresh perspective, like you mentioned, is Fede Alvarez. I think he would do wonders with it based on what I've seen him do with that Evil Dead remake in 2013. I think he could pull off something creepy like this in a really effective way. If we're going to make it, what do you think of that choice? I don't know. I just feel like it's a great choice. I feel like I've patted myself on the back right now. I did great.
Well, I don't think it's a bad choice. But what about, so what, I guess what I'm thinking is like, who's the most similar to, Friedkin working today? So Friedkin wasn't a horror director. He was kind of an everything kind of guy. You know, I would like to see somebody like if you're going to go with a name director, I'd like to see Steven Soderbergh direct that.
Okay.
Because he's got your indie personality, but he's done high level films. He's going to bring a level of artisticness to it, I think. But if you're, you know, Fede, like his first movie was the Evil Dead remake, which I really do. I love. So maybe we look at somebody who's on the up and up. And if we're looking up and up, I think, and should I try to say this name and butcher it?
Yes. I would like nothing more.
Demon Rugna, who did Terrified.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think Terrified is stylistically a really incredibly well done execution of what it feels like to be scared. And I think, like, while the movie isn't heavy on story, so I don't necessarily want him to write the movie, but I think in terms of directing abilities, I think his abilities are just ridiculously strong and effective. Oh, you know who would be great? Also, these are all interesting directors, I think, because Fede is, well, I think he is the one I just mentioned. He's Argentinian. Fede is from Mexico, I believe.
I believe so.
And then I was going to say Andre Overdahl, who did Scary Stories and Autopsy of Jane Doe and Troll Hunter.
Yeah, I think, that could be really interesting.
I think he'd be a great choice as well. I mean, Autopsy of Jane Doe, I think, is a perfect execution in a similar vein. But I don't know. I think there's a good, and then maybe like Gareth Edwards.
I kind of forgot about him. I don't know why.
Not Gareth Edwards. VHS 2? Gareth Evans. Who did Apostle?
Yeah.
And he did VHS 2 in The Raid. I like his vibe.
I think these are all choices that would fit well into the stylistic type of movie.
Yeah.
Here's one that doesn't, that I just want to throw out because I more or
give
less
it to
want,
me.
I want your reaction and listeners' reactions. I'm probably just starting a fire here. But you're like someone who maybe doesn't make horror films, and I feel like some people are arguing this guy doesn't. But Ari Aster.
Yeah, so I think I'm okay with that because I also considered I think he's in the same vein as Robert Eggers, who I'd also like to see. I just don't think that they have an interest in doing a property like this that's going to be so tough. I know Eggers is supposed to do, or at one point he was supposed to do Nosferatu, but it's perfect to his style, but also he can bend that mythology without people being mad because Dracula and Nosferatu has been told 1,000 times. But when you're thinking of The Exorcist, I think it's just
it could be a slow burn type of film too, like Nosferatu can fit into that witch type style of filmmaking, whereas The Exorcist has those moments, but it's also like really intense at times. I don't know, depends on how they do it, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of good picks in there. Let's hear your picks. Please tell us who you think, or if you even think this should be done. I'd like to hear everyone chime in.
You know, I'll throw in one more pick, only because they just had a film come out and it was one in my top two of the year. And I think that their style, Natalie Erica James, who did Relic, I think Relic is a movie that I could see her making her version of The Exorcist. And maybe it would be more fascinating to watch a movie that's notoriously like featured women. If we're going to continue down that path, or if we're going to actually look to remake the novel, The Exorcist, I think seeing it from a female perspective might be a little bit more interesting. In particular, her, I think how she handles in Relic, the familia elements, which is very important to the Exorcist, and her ability to create insane tension and terror when you really don't see anything. So, and The Exorcist, you know, you don't really see anything. You get a couple flashes, but most of it is dialogue and noise, and that's done exceptionally well, I think, in Relic. So, I think these are all good choices. Actually, my last one might be my favorite.
I have I'll throw one more in there because why not? But you bring up a good point, and we're like, well, what about a female's perspective on this? Because we haven't had that before. But what about Jennifer Kent? I think she could do an interesting thing on it with what she did with, you know, obviously The Babadook, and bringing that kind of fear to life.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that those are all good choices. So if you pick one, if you do it and you pick any of those people we suggested, I think there's going to be an interesting film there. I don't think you follow the novel. I think you follow the spirit of somebody being possessed, and then the rest could be all sorts of differently. I mean, shit, you could, The Exorcist was made when 1973.
Man, I'm way off if that's the case.
Yeah, 1973. So they shot it in probably like 71. Well, the novel came out in 71, so they probably shot it in 72. And it's a very 70s movie, like early 70s movie. So, I mean, you could put it anywhere. You know, like, I would like to see it done maybe like 2000, when there's light elements of technology available. But maybe not necessarily 2020. You know, 2020 horror films are tough because how do you not include Snapchat?
Right. Yeah. Or TikTok.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm so 2019 by saying Snapchat.
Live Exorcist on TikTok.
Yeah.
The views. All right. All good choices. Let's hear what you have to say. Hit us up on social. Let's jump in to the subject matter of today. Cursed films from Shudder. Deals with everything from real skeletons from India that are floating in these poltergeist swimming pools to real life medical professionals that star in movies and then later turn out to be murderers. A lot of interesting things to talk about and discuss in Shudder's Cursed Films docuseries. We're going to talk about each one of them a little bit and some of the things that made them kind of have this mythical lore around them being cursed. And then at the end, Adam and I will rank them in terms of which ones we think are the most cursed.
We hear a lot about cursed films around horror productions. Crazy things that happen on the set of The Exorcist or The Omen or Poltergeist.
When you're working intensively on a project and something really anomalous occurs, it's tempting to say this project feels cursed.
There was all of this information about the movie being cursed.
And then you enter the internet into that and forget about it.
There are rumors that they used real skeletons from India and it led to a curse.
If you need skeletons to come out of a muddy pool, what do you do? Well, get some real ones, I guess.
Our brains are designed to believe all sorts of things, whether they're poltergeists.
There was a moment during production when their sets caught fire.
Aliens and conspiracies.
Gregory Peck was supposed to be on a flight that he canceled. The plane crashed and killed everyone on board.
Angels and demons.
The Antichrist would do everything not to have this picture made. For me, that was in one ear and out the other.
It was the last night of shooting. It was the final scene with the rescue of the two children.
Things are getting too close to the helicopter. And I turn around, I said, run.
They do the shot, and then he drops down, and he didn't get up.
I think it's easier for people to try to come up with some kind of conspiracy theory that helps justify why this person is suddenly gone.
There has to be a reason for something terrible happening. That's the crux of all this cursed thinking.
I think we bring on our own curses upon us. Otherwise, you have to believe that there are really demonic forces out there.
So there you have it, the trailer for Cursed Films on Shudder. Let's dive into the first film we're going to talk about from this docuseries, The Exorcist, which we just talked about a lot of, so I feel like it's a good transition.
Perfect.
Anytime that you have curses and demons kind of stirring the pot for something, it's bound to probably have a bad result when you have that type of subject matter. And how freaking, as we brought him up before, was kind of a Wild West filmmaker back in the 70s. It just fueled all kinds of trouble for this film, not just from a production standpoint, but some of the bizarre stories that are hidden within it. So,
yeah.
What did you, what stood out most to you, or was there anything that you learned during these? I'd like to kind of bring that up too, because there was a lot of stuff regurgitated that I knew. Was there anything that you learned or that jumped out at you that maybe you forgot?
So I think that this is getting a second season, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It was just announced, gosh, 3-4 weeks ago that they greenlit it. They have not announced the films yet.
Okay. So I would say, I'm more interested in the second season, only that they picked five movies that are very famous for having been quote cursed films. And because they're famous, like, I think if you're a horror fan, you've already heard these stories, you've already read. I mean, these are all in the top, 100 of all time scary movies, all but maybe one of them. But I don't think I necessarily learned it, but much like my love for special features on a Blu-ray, this kind of felt like a really good like packaging that would be on each of these box sets. Like The Exorcist one fits perfectly as a special feature, and so does I think The Crow and Poltergeist and so on and so forth. I think they all fit as a good special feature. So even though I've already heard this, it's nice to revisit it and see it packaged in a pleasant way. So I did enjoy all these. I'm trying to think, did I actually learn anything? I don't think so. I mean, I might have like had more visuals to go with like the context of like the urban legends I had heard and the more like the confirmation that some of this stuff was real, but I don't think I actually learned that much. What about you?
I think that's a great point that you bring up, that this is really kind of like special features amplified. And mm-hmm. we so many times don't get that because of streaming content, or if we just see, the theatrical release, you don't get that kind of behind the scenes commentary that often. And so for it to be packaged in that way and give us maybe a unique perspective, especially for people that aren't familiar with the films, maybe new generation of horror films. I will say mm-hmm. on the Exorcist specifically, I did learn one thing, which was that there's a scene when she's getting the CAT scan and they used actual medical professionals for that scene. And one of the assistants to this doctor, again, real people, not actors, was later found out to have stalked someone and murdered them in real life.
Yeah. I always thought that was a story, but so that was kind of pretty fascinating to find out that was indeed real. Did you know that was real?
I had actually not even heard about that. That was the only thing about the specific for The Exorcist that I had never heard about. And so I thought that was pretty fascinating. I almost wanted to hear a side story about it completely, like some weird Unsolved Mysteries thing, except for the fact that he was so quick to admit to the murder. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't even something that they, I mean, he turned himself in essentially. So I thought that was weird. But the bigger thing behind The Exorcist is that all the hype it got from the PR machine, from the studio, and they already had something that they thought could be packaged in such a way to, kind of in the early Hitchcock years of having hysteria and the PR machine behind it driving the film even more so than it probably would have. Because they would set up ambulances outside and talk about people fainting or vomiting at every screening. There was lines out the door, and it was truly and it fueled, and I believe Linda Blair even said it, that talking to a PR person later, a publicist, that it worked perfectly and it played into their hands. And so all these other things that we're talking about, like the urban legend or lore around it, we mostly find out to all be true, was just an added bonus to the PR machine. And I believe in this way, except for the murder that happened, was really things that happened to the actors that could have been avoided, but was in some ways caused by Freakin', with Linda Blair getting hurt in her mm-hmm. harness when she's getting violently thrashed on the bed. And that's a take they actually used in the film. And it jacked her back up, I think, even to this day, they said. I knew about some of those things because I'd actually seen Linda Blair at conventions before and seen clips of her talking about it. But she really seemed like she did this docuseries to kind of, I don't know, she's talked about this over and over again, right? Like, she felt uncomfortable still talking about certain things. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, I guess it's interesting to see how affected she was, but she was still a small child. And I think, we know like the experience of child actors has serious long-term effects on their, stability and like reality as people's, like, so, the problem is that they grow up in these environments in these fantastical situations that as they're evolving as humans that just permanently impact their lives. So I can't imagine being, especially notoriously William Friedkin was a kind of a wild man. So working with a director like that and at such a young age with this intense of a material that was, based on a true story, I'm sure it was traumatizing for her, even though it was you know, at the same time, you're a movie star now. So I don't know. I think it's, of course it was an impact, but I don't know. I felt bad for her.
Yeah. Well, and even Ellen Bernstein that plays her mom, you know, she got pushed really hard during one scene, and that's the scene that they used in the film, and she got hurt. So
yeah,
there's people getting hurt, seem like more often than not, on some of these really rough scenes. But then to top off, you know, all the injuries that happened, there was a fire that burned down a lot of the set except for Regan's room, which also begs the question of, you know, was the devil sending a message to spare this room versus all the rest, kind of playing into that urban folklore, urban legend type of thing that just fuels the fire of the already hyped up PR machine, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have the murders that we've already talked about with the doctor, which is a strange side story all itself. So all the issues surrounding this just add to the fact that many people will list this as one of, if not the most scariest film of all time. And then you add the curse to it, and it's like, man, it kind of amplifies it. Would you consider this one of, like, top three or the scariest movie of all time?
No, I don't think for me, I don't think it's ever been. It was a movie that I think for a long time that I didn't want to revisit that often, and I still really don't.
Yeah. Makes me uncomfortable.
It's an uncomfortable watch. Yeah, it's not that it's super scary. It's just an uncomfortable watch, and I'd rather just not. But it is very good. I understand its impact and how it is one of the scariest movies. Like, when I watch it, I guess as somebody who's not religious, it's not as traumatizing to me. Yeah. What about you?
I would definitely probably put it in my top three. Answering, you know, what's your favorite horror movie? What's the scariest movie of all time is kind of hyperbole. It's hard to really ever put my finger on it. I have a collection of films I would talk about in that way, but I would never just pick one. It's too hard for me. And a lot of ways, it just doesn't make sense. It kind of, it's ever evolving.
Right.
Anyway, The Exorcist is pretty creepy. If you can find B-roll footage of Linda Blair doing makeup tests, it's the fucking creepiest thing you'll watch if you just sit in the dark with that thing on mute and watch her make bizarre faces in that makeup. It's very unnerving. Let's move on to our next film, The Crow. So we can, you know, all agree that we lost Brandon Lee too soon, and it was due to this film. The episode kind of goes into great detail around Brandon Lee and how he met his demise here on the set of The Crow. And I feel like the film probably became more of a cult classic because of the accident, even more so than the film itself in some ways. So this was no, you know, there was no real element of surprise here for me. It was interesting hearing the special effects people, the props people, discuss this in great detail. And then also, I will say I didn't know how close they were to the end of shooting, because you just never know when people shoot films, you know, in what sequence they're shooting or what order. But we're on like the last week of shooting when this happened, and he came through the door, gets shot, and it was supposed to be a blank, and there was, you know, a piece from the last blank that was lodged in the gun, and then when the blank went off, it shot out that debris, which ultimately he dropped to the floor and never got back up. So, I mean, was there anything at all from this episode that you learned?
No, I was just reminded how freaking sad it was.
For sure.
That's all this. Like, this was, while it was a very good episode, well done, it was the most difficult to watch, because you could just see, like, people just don't want to really talk about it and revisit it themselves because they were all there, and it was horrifying.
I would say there's another one on the list that was more like just of a gut punch for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we both agree probably now that we're thinking about it. But yeah, I mean, reliving some of these things. I mean, when anyone dies as a result of the curse, if you will, when we're talking about cursed films, if someone dies, I mean, it's way more harder to swallow than like folklore, urban legend that is real. And people getting injured on the set versus dying. And so for me, it's super sad. to learn about it. But then the parallels between his death and his father's last film, that actually is what blew my mind more than anything.
Yeah.
I had heard about it, but I didn't hear the actual story. And so when you hear about his father's last film, which was, you know, Bruce Lee and The Game of Death, and the parallels between the two situations, because, you know, he dies, Bruce Lee dies in this film, fictionally, of course. Someone shoots him on the set. So it's very meta in what's happening here. And then, you know, all these years later, Brandon Lee actually dies from essentially that same type of thing, but in real life. So pretty shocking. You know, we lose Bruce Lee when he's young. We lose Brandon Lee when he's kind of on the burgeoning of his acting career, and was super proud of this project. So his family was, you know, everyone was like, do we go on? Do we release the film? And his mom, his wife were saying that, you know, he was super proud of this. So please release it. The world needs to see it. So they had to finish shooting without him and basically a double.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's more super sad than really any curse that might have happened. And I was just going to say, it's more negligence in these scenarios and accidents, not necessarily meant on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, surely there's not, the devil's not at work, if that's what you're alluding to, Tim.
No, the devil is not at work. It will be, I feel like, later on.
Yeah.
When we get to The Omen, but not for this scenario. Would you like to see another Crow movie? Like a modernized version of it?
Okay.
Because it's been something that's been, you know, kicked around, obviously, and never really happened.
Truth be told, I've only seen The Crow maybe twice in my life, and it's probably been 10 to 15 years. I never really had an affinity for it. It also never really felt like a horror film to me. It always felt like more...
No, I mean...
Not an action movie, but it's a comic book movie. I don't know, like, whatever that means. Like, it's got elements of horror for sure. But in the same sense of, like, Hellboy never feels like a horror film. It's, like, horror elements in, like, an action superhero movie. I need to revisit it because I do think as an adult I'll enjoy the movie much more. But, yeah.
We're in the exact same boat on that. I think I've only seen it two times, and it's at least been a decade. I mean, closer to when it – and then when it had first come out, maybe after the first couple years. I can't believe it's been out that long either.
No. Yeah, it's been out for a while.
Well, let's move on to our next piece of cursed film, which is The Poltergeist. Another film where, boy, this one's really been talked about quite a bit in terms of the things that surrounded it. Several kind of chains of unfortunate events happened, but it was starting with the thing that gets tossed around the most, are real skeletons that were used in the famous pool scene of the film from India. And I thought it was interesting, the commentary in this is like, well, yeah, you can say cursed because of these real skeletons that are used, but it's not like Hollywood doesn't use actual skeletons in production. This isn't the first time
that
like such a taboo thing happened.
Mm-hmm. This is I think of the group of films that they cover, this is the movie I like the most. This is one of my favorite movies, I think, of all time. I think it's almost a damn near perfect movie. And I'd always heard about the real skeletons, much like Texas Chainsaw Massacre apparently used real corpses as well. It was nice to have them confirm, yeah, we used real stuff. I mean, we did that all the time in all movies, like, whatever, just like classrooms have real bodies too.
Right.
So it kind of wasn't an issue in that sense for me. But it was nice to like have somebody just like plain and simple who worked in the effects just be like, of course we use skeletons. We did all the time.
Yeah, they called out, you know, like House on Haunted Hill back in the day, you know, black and white films. They were using them because it was actually cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Which is bizarre to me that it was cheaper to get the actual skeletons than it was to like recreate a mold or something of it.
Right.
Which, man, that's bizarre. So we always hear about that kind of as the main thing from Poltergeist. It was like, oh, it's wrong, you know, they shouldn't have done it. But what's more tragic are the two female leads in this, the young women, that kind of lost their lives way too soon. And it wasn't because of anything that was cursed. It was, you know, in some ways, medical malpractice. And another way, a domestic violence issue. So
mm-hmm.
start with actress Dominic Dunn, who played Dana Freeling in the film, and she had a very, you know, abusive boyfriend at the time. I think people, you know, she'd come to set with bruises, and the cast and crew would kind of know something wasn't quite right. But unfortunately, in October, she was strangled by her boyfriend in the driveway in West Hollywood, and she later died about a week later. She was only 22. She never regained consciousness after she was strangled, and just a sad, sad way to see her life end when there was a lot of telltale signs there. So, Now you mentioned Carol Ann earlier, and how you thought you felt more like Carol Ann in your creepy feeling. Do you want to talk about Heather's kind of demise here? Heather O'Rourke, who played Carol Ann in Poltergeist?
Yeah, I mean, she was like the heart and soul kind of for all of us with the series. I mean, she's the tagline. She literally is the poster for the first film. And she was the through line really until I think the third film, third, right, is when she got replaced, when she passed away. I just remember when she passed away from, you know, I think at the time it was because of the age we lived in, it was like, it quickly became an urban legend. It was like the girl from the Poltergeist films. She was, you know, she died of like a stomach issue, right?
Yeah, it was intestinal intestinal stenosis.
Yeah.
At age 12.
But I had heard a million different things though, like the set was haunted and like that something supernatural had got to her and she had died. No one knew how she had died. She died in some mysterious way. And I remember, you know, being sad because I think I was. So I don't know if I actually saw that movie because I think that one came out in the late 80s. So I was only a couple years old, but I think I saw it probably in like the early 90s on VHS. And I remember my brother told me the story of the story. So I didn't know it was like this headline grabbing thing because how it was like positioned in here was it almost felt like a murder, like JonBenet style. Like it was positioned in like the headlines, like this horrible thing. So of course people ran away with that, like, you know, that it was more than just a stomach issue they couldn't track down, and just like a freak death. It was crazy. And I remember like it was weird to see them reshooting the scenes and how they were, you know, of course you'd be against it because it would be just surreal, right?
Well, and she had a very kind of close relationship with the director, so you could tell in this docuseries too how incredibly sad he was. And you know, going on the set that day and having to shoot the extra, you know, with the wig from the back, with the dress on.
Yeah.
And how everyone on set just felt so, and it would be so weird to have worked with these people for, you know, weeks, months, have a relationship with them, and then essentially be shooting a scene that's supposed to be them when they've passed away to finish the film. It was just bizarre. But she's definitely one of the most iconic horror children in the genre. And that line is classic. They're here.
Yeah.
And it just sets everything off, right? For the whole series, even to this day. I thought it was also interesting. I read where Drew Barrymore was considered for this part over Heather O'Rourke. But it later landed her that the audition that cast her in the role of E.T. So that was kind of an interesting thing. Could you imagine Drew Barrymore being in this part? It's hard for me to think about that because Heather just fit it so perfectly.
Yeah, and I think it might be a little distracting, like having somebody who became a superstar to see them as a kid. It just wouldn't it wouldn't feel the same to me, I don't think.
But so Dominic Dunn and Heather O'Rourke both buried in the same cemetery, Westwood Memorial Park in Los Angeles. So they met their demise pretty early, both very tragic, nothing to do with really cursed films. Everyone will tie it back maybe to those ghost stories that you're talking about or the skeleton, but that's just not the case. It's more tragedy. This really should be called tragic films.
Right.
But this film was also interesting because it's paranormal, doesn't really have blood, doesn't have graphic violence or like people getting killed. It was just kind of an 80s era when you could... 80s era where that wasn't quite as celebrated because you're really like in slasher mode still.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have this blend of kind of digital and practical effects for the film like this and have it be beloved by so many and create that iconic character is pretty, pretty incredible, really.
Yeah.
Kind of emblem type of horror film.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, it's pretty fascinating, I think, to see what they were accomplished in this time. And definitely Amblin horror.
Well, let's get on to another demonic curse, The Omen. Boy, and oh
this
boy.
So this one felt the most minor to me, but I did enjoy it because it was also the one that has the most top tier people who worked on the movie talking about it. Like you get Richard Donner in this, you get some of the producers, you get effects people, you get kind of every aspect of this movie because it wasn't as horrible.
This to me almost, yeah, there wasn't as many tragic things that actually happened to people necessarily, but it was near misses. It was like the near miss film. And I actually didn't know a lot about this going in. This one, along with the Twilight Zone movie, which we'll get into in a moment, I knew the least about from the storylines that they were telling. And, you know, much like The Exorcist, we have this demonic storyline that involves a child, which opens up kind of that creepy discussion that can be fueled with these near-death accidents and near-death experiences of cast and crew. But I believe it was the producer. You correct me if I'm wrong, but they were like, you shouldn't make this movie. The devil will not like it. The devil will not accept it or something to that effect.
Yeah, that's
and
correct.
Before it even got made. So that kind of fueled, set the stage, right, for everything that could and kind of would happen. So while it was minor, it felt like a lot of things did happen with this. Wouldn't you agree, though?
Yeah,
like
for
the
sure.
most activity, at least, that occurred. They wanted this film got made because they wanted to replicate the success that The Exorcist had. And that's when they opened production in London. And so they wanted to kind of have this formula for the same blockbuster, maybe even have some of the hype factor around it and kind of follow in weird ways like a cursed playbook that The Exorcist had. It was the creator, Robert Munger, that warned the producer, Harvey Bernard, that this film shouldn't get made because it's going to be cursed right off the bat. And I feel like in some ways he's kind of right. Out of all the ones that might have a curse factor to it, because actor Gregory Peck, he had a scene where he was getting attacked by the dog and the stuntman stepped in. He was wearing protective clothing. He's still bitten, bit the trainers, couldn't get the dogs to stop. And then another animal trainer that was on the set actually later died after filming the scene where the baboons attacked Damien. Now, it wasn't a direct result of that, but it was all these tangential things with this film mm-hmm. that kept happening. Including Gregory Peck. Do you want to talk about maybe the worst luck of all?
Yeah, I assume you're talking about the dog attack.
Well, the lightning strike.
Oh, yeah. When he was on the plane, the plane was struck by lightning. I think 3 times.
Yeah, it was so like Gregory Peck avoided an accident because he didn't on a plane. But then lightning strikes happened to the cast or crew in some capacity 3 times to airplanes they were on. Nothing happened in terms of them having crashes, no deaths. But I've been on airplanes with lightning storms a couple times, and I'm not going to lie. As the older I get, for whatever reason, and maybe I've always felt this way, I don't like heights. I've always kind of had some weird fear of flying in my head, and it feels like it gets worse as I get older. Maybe it's because of what we've lived through, through terrorists and that kind of thing. But turbulence bothers me if it's really bad, and lightning terrifies me. Because in my mind, I'm always like, this thing's going to get struck. Or maybe there's going to be some demon on the wing.
Yeah.
On the plane. I don't know. I mean, 3 times is insane to me over the course of this filming. I wonder how often that happens.
Probably, well, that we know, probably not very often. I mean, I don't think I have as... I'm not a paranoid person like you are, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't really get nervous flying, I guess.
The worst part is I'll listen to podcasts or music on takeoff, or if there's turbulence, and I'll be listening to something lighthearted, right? Like Comedy Bank or something. And then they'll do a freaking improv skit about, oh, the plane's going to crash. And I'm like, you motherfuckers. I'm sitting here white knuckled on my seat and you're talking about a plane crashing, but
yeah.
So there was also IRA bombings that took place in London at a restaurant.
Yeah.
The producer and his wife was supposed to have dinner. And for whatever reason, I don't remember, they didn't go that night. And there was deaths that occurred in that bombing, right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. And, well, he was supposed to be there, and for whatever reason,
they canceled.
Yeah, rescheduled for whatever, as it happens. I don't know. I think that was that one probably would scare me more than the lightning strikes, just because it's absolutely. Just a bomb blowing up for sure.
The most disturbing thing that happened to anyone involved in this film, I thought, was the special effects designer, John Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
We find out, wasn't this part creepy? The scene, there's a scene in the film where there's decapitation, and he's obviously involved in it as special effects designer. But ultimately, life kind of imitated art, because John and his wife got into a freak car accident later on, and a tire flew through the air. Decapitated his wife through the window. I can't even fathom that being real. It's like something you'd only watch in a movie. John was
very
Final
Destination when they talk about that.
Yeah, John was knocked unconscious. He came to, found out his wife was dead, and supposedly said that he saw a sign on the side of the road that said Omen, O-M-M-E-N. O-M-M-E-N was 66.6 kilometers away. So incredibly unnerving, if that's true. And what a weird coincidence. Or was it a figment of his imagination? I have no idea. You go through tragedy like that, you could maybe make anything up. But
yeah.
Regardless.
That was very scary. But again, continues the trend of how sad most of these stories are, and how they're just horrific things happening.
Well, let's not lighten the mood. Let's get a little darker and go into the last one. Twilight Zone, the movie. So this was the one I knew the least about. I knew it was a thing. I knew it never came out. But I honestly didn't really know anything about it. What is your background knowledge on this?
This is another one that I've seen, I think, one or two times when I was very young. So I remember beats in the movie, something on the wing. And,
right.
That's it. I remember somebody being killed on it, but I don't remember very much outside of that. So this one was basically it. I don't remember much about the movie. I don't remember much about the story.
I didn't know anything about it. At least the scene, which was shot by Landis, John Landis. Everyone knows him probably more famously, I feel like, from Thriller, from a mainstream perspective. You hear things about kind of the wild, wild west of filmmaking, and boy, this takes it to, I feel like, a whole new level, because there's a scene where we have the main actor, and I'm blanking on his name right now, so I apologize. If you know, please chime in.
Is that Vic Morrow?
Yes. So he has a scene toward the end of this movie. It's kind of in a Vietnam style village, and he's saving two children from the village.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear a lot from the set designer, set dresser, who clearly has issues to this day from this. And why wouldn't you, right? Ultimately, it's not his fault. He warned them that there was potential danger in this during the pre-production and when they're basically doing rehearsals. He kind of landed, this was the first kind of big gig he landed. And I remember, I believe the producers on the show or on the film came up and said, this is great. You made it to the big time. This is a stepping stone piece for him in his career. And so moving forward, we see these two children being rescued from the Vietnam village. Well, it was going to be a helicopter rescue, a chopper.
Mm-hmm.
It was near a ridge. The village was set against a ridge next to a kind of water and a pond or a river. And they're flying in. There's tons of pyrotechnics going off, like, you know, explosions happening around them while this plane's coming down. And they're like, man, the set designer was like, I think we need to kill the pyro a little bit. It's too much. And they're like, Landis was like, if you think that's a lot, like, wait until we actually shoot. Which goes back to the negligence fact, right? So here we go. Scene gets shot, pulling the kids out. The parents of the kids are like, is this safe? I believe one of the producers or someone said, oh, it's like a Disney ride. Like, don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. Next thing we know, they're running across the water, and the chopper, something happens to the chopper, whether it was pyrotechnics, I don't quite remember, or if it was just too low. But it crashed, and when it crashed, it went sideways. When it went sideways, the blades, unfortunately, basically cut them in half, decapitated the actors and the children. And this one was a gut punch to me, more than any of the other ones, because actual lives were lost in a super tragic way that has affected people to this day pretty profoundly, it seems like.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, it's, well, Landis had insisted that they film at night, and the kids weren't legally allowed, and he's like, well, we'll just do it at night, we won't tell anybody. And I guess they were also using, like, real, like, bullets in some of the scenes, like, for the Vietnam stuff, and, yeah, I think what happened was a bomb, like, a firebomb went off where the helicopter was flying, and it caused the pilot to lose control, and because it hit the part of the helicopter, and then the helicopter crashed down into the river where the actors were standing and fell apart and decapitated the kids. I mean, it's horrifyingly sad and makes you really just say, fuck John Landis, because when you see him subsequently, like, just say, like, well, that's the movie business, basically. Like, he just has no remorse and seemingly doesn't give a shit.
It was more to me that was his stance that we kind of hear secondhand, because he wanted no part of this. But it's pretty publicly well known at this point. But he still went to the funerals and spoke at the funerals. So such a weird thing to kind of be like, well, accidents happen. But then to still care enough to go to the funerals and speak at them. Just bizarre to me.
Yeah, it just shows, I think, how out of touch he was with what had transpired. I don't know. That was a tough episode to watch, probably the most of them, just because how it all plays out. And it was 100% avoidable.
You feel like in some ways he really, like, you know, he wanted no part of the documentary, but in a lot of ways he could have used this to kind of clear the air and maybe even have it be therapeutic and talk to that set designer and talk through. I mean, that would have been incredibly interesting to see, but also, like, the right thing to do in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You would think he would want to clear there, but yeah, the fact that he doesn't is, I guess, continues the fuck John Landis of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Super sad. Like I said, a gut punch. If there was ever a film in the five that we watched to call this series tragic films, this would be the one. Yeah. All right. We've got through all of those. We kind of give you some background on it in case you didn't know. I still suggest watching this. You know, we're just touching on things. It's good to hear it from the people firsthand. And, you know, you're going to hear details that we left out, too. So, again, if you want to get a copy of it, physical media, hit us up on Twitter. Hashtag ask a creep at downright creepy. Now let's get into our rankings of which films we felt quote unquote were the cursed films of these. And do you want to start off with your number? Actually, just go through all of them and then I'll go through mine, starting with number five.
Number five is going to be The Twilight Zone. It was sad as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't want to revisit that one. I think it's the hardest one to get through. It's not, it wasn't my favorite to watch. I mean, I learned the most in it. It's certainly, while I've wanted to personally revisit the film, I don't really want to now.
I agree. Yeah. What was your number four?
My number four is, I think, going to be for the same reason as The Crow. The Crow, like, a movie I don't have a huge connection with. So that's like a part of it as well. But also it's just so like it's been in the zeitgeist of my life this whole time that Brendan Lee died because of this and a malfunction. It's just while it's a freak accident, it's so morose. Those two episodes are just not very fun, like as compared to like The Omen. Sure. Like The Omen, I think, is the most fun of the whole series. But number three, I would say, is Poltergeist, probably because I knew it the most. It is something that feels like the most special features on a Blu-ray. It is, of course, still sad because multiple people are killed and die for different reasons. And then The Exorcist, I think, is going to be my number two. Exorcist is, it's not as serious. Like, I guess the stakes aren't as high. Like, it's a lot of misses with things, and it still plays on. It still feels like a feature, a special feature, one that I would revisit. It was very quick to watch. It was fun to revisit some of the behind the scenes stuff, and then it's got like the guy, the extra that was a serial killer during that time. Like, it's just like an interesting little twist, I think, that's not so directly to the movie, even though he's in the movie. And then, of course, that puts my last one as The Omen. The Omen, I think, is just like it's the be all of all these. I think it's the most urban legend, the most misses and almost things happen on the set. And while somebody does die, they're not directly related to the film. And it could have, that could just happen on any film. I'm sure people die all the time making movies, unfortunately. But that one just had all the pieces to feel like the most fun and mysterious and creepy. And I think that's the one. Like, if you're going to sell this show to somebody who doesn't like have an interest, you start with The Omen because I think it's going to reel them in the best.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I also feel like we kind of just probably became best friends because we talked about doing this episode. We both watched the series. We really only talked about how we were going to set the episode up with talk about the films first, set them up, and then at the end we'll give our rankings. We didn't talk about our rankings at all. And then here we are. We get together to record, and it turns out we have the exact same rankings. Which is kind of crazy to me. Like, not even one was flip-flopped. Number five, Twilight Zone for me. Number four, The Crow. Both of those there for the same reasons that if this is truly a cursed films story that we're going for, or kind of meat of the docuseries, those are the least cursed to me. They're just more tragic. Poltergeist was three. It's a mixture of kind of tragedy and folklore curse. Exorcist. And then The Omen. And The Exorcist wasn't number one for me because it was more PR fueled. Mm-hmm. Some ways, The Omen, on the backside of it, from a curse perspective, had more potential bad things that could have happened. I mean, there could have been multiple deaths to cast members and stuff like that were happening. And with the producer saying immediately, like, don't make this film, the devil will not like it, that sets the tone, I think, for all the things that happen around it to be even more amplified than The Exorcist, that was more of a PR fueled piece of kind of creepiness. So very interesting, I think. And I think for a lot of the same reasons, we have the same rankings on these films. But do yourself a favor, check it out. I love Adam's kind of explanation early on about this is really commentary features that would be nice things to happen on every Blu-ray release or DVD release, and things that we just don't get that often, and seeing the inside story from the people that lived it, I think is great. So if you want, check it out on Shudder. I believe it's still up there. Again, you can win a physical copy from Downright Creepy. What is your series rating on this out of 100%?
All right, I set it up early that I'm a pretty big fan of special features on Blu-rays, and this just feels like nothing but special features. They're especially in a time when I want something more lighthearted to watch, even though some of these get darker. They're still like, I love everything about movie making and the behind the scenes stuff and urban legends and things like that. So this kind of does it for me on those levels. So I think for me, it's a 90%. I'm actually more excited for season two because I think we're going to get much deeper cuts. I mean, we're certainly getting the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think, just because they use supposedly dead bodies. I'm sure there's going to be some behind the scenes stuff of that film that is just shocking and interesting. But outside of that, I have no fucking idea what they're going to do. So that interests me the most. But I did really like this one, even if it was kind of the greatest hits of stories that have ever been told.
I agree. I think season two is going to be really interesting. And when I saw the press release come out for it that announced it, I immediately was like, what are we going to get? So Shudder, if you're listening to this, let's give us the scoop. Give us a scoop. What are you going to show us?
Drop me something, baby.
Yeah, give it to us. My rating for this is 85 out of 100, a little lower than yours, but still very good. Mostly because stuff we've already touched on. You know, I wanted more lore, I think, and less death in some ways.
Sure.
With the Twilight Zone movie and The Crow. So I think you're right. I think we're going to get more interesting things that we haven't heard. But this was a great foundation piece. I think it's great for maybe generations that haven't seen some of these older films to go and learn about. And in some ways, you could watch this and not even have seen the film and then go back and watch it again. Watch the films after that and probably enjoy them even more knowing some of that stuff. So yeah, slightly lower than yours, but still a great rating.
Absolutely.
Internet Movie Database has it as 7.1 out of 10, which is actually really good. And Rotten Tomatoes even did it one better at a 95% for critics and 71% for audiences.
Wow, that's great.
I saw some people, audiences, if you will, say that they didn't like it as much because they're like, it felt expected, which we've talked about. So I think that might be the lower kind of dip where we see the audience, but still very good ratings, worth checking out. So that is Shudder's Curse Films. That is all for this episode. Do you have anything to add to that before we drop off?
No, I think this was a fun one. I think we talked about the most things we could talk about in a single episode.
That's for sure. And some interesting discussions on what they should do with that reboot for The Exorcist.
We gave you all the information you need.
Just go make it now. Just go do it. Don't forget to hashtag Ask a Creep @DownrightCreepy on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? Which one would you want them to hit you up on if they want to talk to you?
I think I'm at Waste of Mind.
Yeah, you are. Okay. That's great.
I don't use it that often, but maybe if you at me, I'll start using it more.
Yeah, I'm at Casey Canton, or you can hit us up at Downright Creepy. We also have at Creepcast Pod. I mean, why not follow all of things?
Give it to us.
Why not be overwhelmed? Follow us everywhere. So we will see you next week or next episode. We're going to talk about more creepy things, movie recommendations. Also, check us out. Rate us, review us. Why not? On Anchor FM. You can find us on there. Spotify, iTunes, everywhere you can find podcast. So, Adam, I will see you next week.
All right. Keep it creepy.
All right. Always.
Listening to a Downright Creepy original on the Crickets Podcast Network.